With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
This is Football Social Daily, the daily Premier League podcast. I'm Jim Salverson. Thanks for listening. But just because we're reaching the end of the season, by the way, it doesn't mean that it's all feet up and sitting on the beach for us. We are going to be here with you right the way through the summer. And most importantly, bringing you podcasts all the way through this summer's European Championships as well. So don't go anywhere, because we won't be going anywhere. If you've not already, make sure you're following this podcast or you're subscribed for free and you'll get the latest episodes as soon as they are ready. And if you're excited about the European Championships and want another podcast in the build-up to this summer, then check out Gavin Hamilton's Euros Road Trip on the Sports Social Podcast Network. We've got esteemed football journalist Gavin Hamilton talking to some of the great and good from Europe's newsrooms, giving some really great insight on their respective nations ahead of this summer's tournament. There is a different show for every nation involved in the Euros. If you want to find that, search Gavin Hamilton's Euros Road Trip wherever you find your podcasts, or you can head to the Sports Social Podcast Network and find it there, along with a load of other great shows as well. However, on this podcast today, I've got Marley Anderson. How are you doing, Marley?
Good morning. Yes, not too bad.
And we've got Niall McCorn on the show. You all right, Niall?
I'm very well. And talking of Gavin Hamilton's Euros Road Trip, I recently listened to the episode focusing on Ukraine, and I now feel like an absolute expert in it. I think I can speak Ukrainian a little bit now after listening to that. Honestly, it's a good show. You should listen to it.
What I like about the shows is it's mostly about the football, but you always get a little bit of info about like the geopolitical state of the nations as well. It's a proper education. Go and find it anyway. It's a great show. So no Premier League football tonight, which feels like quite a nice thing to say, doesn't it? It's actually the only day this week without a game of Premier League football, but we are going to look back at Sheffield United's shock win over Everton last night. That ended the Toffees' chances pretty much of European football next season. I've also asked Niall and Marley to come up with a big prediction ahead of this final week of the Premier League. Something when we know the title's been decided, we know the relegation places have been decided. So what else could potentially grab the headlines over the next 7 days between now and Sunday? We're going to get Niall and Marley and my suggestions as to what that might be a little bit later. And the transfer side of the game, as you'd expect as the season kind of reaches an end, is really ramping up right now. Some big transfer news to go over, including if you're a Manchester United supporter, there is some potential centre-back recruitment. If you're a Liverpool supporter, well, there's someone at Anfield who looks like they're going to be heading out of the door, having failed to really make much of an impact this season. And of course, as we head towards the summer, there's rumours around Jadon Sancho and Paul Pogba, and today Lionel Messi, where he could be going. Is it going to be the Premier League? And if it is coming to the Premier League, who's it going to be with? We'll get all onto that shortly on Football Social Daily. But let's start with Everton 0, Sheffield United 1. Here's your challenge, boys. Convince me that Carlo Ancelotti is doing a better job than Marco Silva did at Everton, because right now, I can't see it. Have I got an agenda here against Carlo Ancelotti now? Because I feel like I'm saying this again and again and again, but it's been a really disappointing season for Everton and I can't see much progress.
I think you do have an agenda to the point where your dartboard at home has got a picture of Carlo Ancelotti's face on it and you're throwing darts at his head. It's what it feels like, because it does feel, you're right, it does feel like you're kind of digging into Carlo Ancelotti quite a lot recently. But I can understand why, because he is a top manager. He's one of the best managers we've seen in European football over the last 20 years. But I think Everton, their issue was inconsistency under Marco Silva, and under Carlo Ancelotti, their issue again has been inconsistency. However, you know, they are eighth in what has been a weird season, and I think that, I mean, it's so cliche now to talk about this after we've done it for 10 months, but fans in Goodison Park, I think, will make a difference, because I said this on the show the other day, the Everton fans are not the kind of crop to let average football slide, particularly at home. And it's at home where Everton have been poor this season, which is interesting because that's in stark contrast to Marco Silva, who had an excellent record at Goodison but was rubbish on the road. And it's
6 points they've got in 2021 at home.
It's poor,
which is ridiculous.
It really is poor, and there's no defending that. And it's almost the flip side of what Marco Silva was doing. As I said, he was pretty solid at home. I think Everton had an excellent home record under Silva for a couple of years, but since Ancelotti's come in, they've been poor at home, and that's something they're going to have to address, particularly with the fans returning even as soon as this weekend or next weekend, at least before the end of the season, and then we might even have a full house by the start of next campaign. In terms of what we expected of Everton, I just wonder whether their start to the season, Jim, might be the reason why you're gunning for them a little bit, because, you know, they were around the top of the table in October, and they won, I think, the majority of their opening fixtures, and they had a really good time of it. Dominic Calvert-Lewin was scoring bagfuls of goals. In the last 3 months, that's sort of tailed off, hasn't it? From sort of February to now, Dominic Calvert-Lewin hasn't been as fit. He's not scored as many goals. I think that the absence of James Rodriguez, which is a lot, by the way, he spends a lot of time on the sidelines, I don't think that helps. I think Alan was injured for a bit. But these are all just excuses. You shouldn't be losing to Sheffield United at home. You know, the rain was pouring down last night. It was horrible conditions. It was the sort of evening where you think we're playing against the relegated side. We should beat these. And that is maybe a bit of complacency, something Carlo Ancelotti needs to sort out. Now, I think it's harsh to blame him and to say that he's not doing a good a job as Marco Silva. I can understand the argument. But the...
No, I'm saying he's doing no better than Marco Silva. I'm not saying he's doing worse. I think it's tied. It's 50-50 at the moment.
Okay, if we drag it back to the bare bones, do you think James Rodriguez and Alan sign for Everton if Marco Silva is still the manager? My answer would be no. Probably not a chance. Yeah, and therefore, would they even be eighth? No, they might even be where Wolves are in 12th or Crystal Palace in 13th, because that's how average they were. And, you know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin was getting opportunities under Marco Silva, but it was kind of Ancelotti's experience, I think, which really helped Calvert-Lewin step up to the next level. And we're still unsure whether he might go to the Euros for England this summer. So my answer is, I think that Ancelotti is doing a better job than Marco Silva, but I also think that he's not doing as well as he should be and definitely could be doing. And that's something they need to sort out. But the Goodison form, I think, is more concerning than anything else. I mean, losing to a Sheffield United side, you know, who have only picked up their, what was it, sixth victory of the season, and only their second victory away from home. The other was against Manchester United, I think, just after Christmas. So, you know, you have to look at that and say that's poor. And Everton, I thought, didn't really offer much last night.
Carlo Ancelotti, I'm going to say gets away with it, but that feels much harsher than it is, because he hasn't been terrible as Everton manager. Like Niall says, there is some progress in the playing style. He has been able to attract players that probably his previous managers wouldn't have. But do you think he kind of doesn't maybe get the criticism that other managers would because of the status that he has and what he's achieved in the game previously? Maybe rightly so.
I think when you've got a manager that experienced and has done so much in the game, you almost know that when something's not going right at a club, it's not his fault, because he's been around for so long that you're thinking, you know, he must have seen situations like this before. He must know the answers, but he just hasn't got probably the players to do it. And I think if you look at Everton's squad, it's a bit sort of patchy. I think there's quality players in certain positions, And then there's a lack of quality elsewhere. Like, if Calvert-Lewin doesn't play, they haven't got a goal threat. I think on the wings, they could be better. I think when you're playing Alex Iwobi and Hope...
Ridiculous, isn't it? The amount of money they've spent for a very average squad.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, centre midfield, when it clicks, like Doucouré and Alan, I think they're as combative and as quality as you can get, to be honest, in that sort of department. And then you've got... If you get James Rodriguez ahead of them and you get him fit all the time, I think that's a problem solved as well. But it's the people around them and the depth they've got. I think when they lost Doucouré earlier this season, I think they didn't have him for 8 games and didn't win any of them. But when those guys come out of the team, it's kind of like, okay, now we've got a problem. And you put Tom Davies in, and I like Tom Davies as a player, but he's not as good as the guys he's coming in to replace. So, you know, you've got squad players, you know, I've got Josh King every week on the podcast, it seems, but you're bringing in players like him, and he's just not, he's nowhere near as good as the guys he's coming in for. So I think as well, when you add the fans, like Niall said, I do agree with that as well, with the home form being poor. I think having fans back could really sort of give them that extra little push. And we'll see that in the next couple of weeks, and obviously going into next season as well, that we'll see their impact if there is one, and we'll see what they can do next season. But as of now, I think the top six and the top seven and the whole race is really, really tight anyway. And sometimes even when you've spent money, there's no guarantee that you're going to get success. So, but I mean, Ancelotti, the thing that's impressed me about Everton is they win in sort of one-off games where you would expect them to roll over a little bit. And I think that is harder than getting consistency, because sometimes if you have consistency and you do what you expected to do every week, you come unstuck against teams that are at the top of the league. And I think this season they've had a lot of games where they win when you weren't expecting them to, and they turn up for a game and they really fancy it. But it's the games like last night against Sheffield United where they're almost expected to win, and there's a bit of complacency sort of sneaks into the game, and they don't take the chances and they get shocked. And that's happened a few times this season. They've lost twice to Newcastle, they've lost
Fulham
to Sheffield United, they've lost to Fulham, and it's that they've got to get over, and I think maybe fans coming back will help them with that.
Let's talk about the game itself and Sheffield United, because as you said, Niall, few and far between these victories for Sheffield United this season. Points have been few and far between as well. What did they do last night that they failed to do for most of the season?
They didn't concede. It's as simple as that. They kept a clean sheet, and I thought that they dug in and they nullified Everton. And I think that's, you know, partly to do with Everton looking quite blunt. And I think that was the case last night, as I've already mentioned. But I just thought Sheffield United defended well. I thought the goalkeeper played well. I thought the defenders held the line well. I thought that just in general, everything that came into the box was being repelled and sent back. And I think the last 5-10 minutes, it was mainly Everton possession. And a lot of the time, Everton were picking the ball up on the halfway line. But I just felt that they stayed focused, they stayed concentrated, and they didn't crack. And I think that is what they did well. They managed to get themselves a goal, and they defended the lead really, really well. Now, this is something we saw them do under Chris Wilder last season, where they would win quite a few games by the margin of one goal, just a single goal, and they'd be able to shut themselves out at the back and see out games. It's something they've not done this season, Sheffield United. I mean, if you look at the actual standings, they've conceded 62 goals this season, which is, funnily enough, the same as Newcastle United. So, you know, you look at the amount of goals they've conceded, it's not as many as the like. I mean, Southampton have conceded more, West Brom above them have conceded more. So defensively, they're not as bad as some people say, but the problem is when they do concede, they can't ever find themselves a way back into the game. You know, they don't score many goals, and it's a similar story for Fulham as well. But what they did well is they kept it watertight at the back. You know, and even though they've conceded over 60 goals in the league this season, you know, they've not been hammered loads. Like, for instance, Southampton got hammered, didn't they? 9-0 by Manchester United. And we've seen some other teams like West Brom get it handed to them as well. But if you look at the way they actually dug in and just looked like they kind of were up for the fight. You know, if you look at their record, I think they've won 2 of the last 5 games. So, I mean, I don't know whether that's just because the foot's off the gas and they've been relegated for a while now, but I just thought that's what they did better last night. They actually defended their box really well. they managed to snuff out any dangerous attacks that Everton had, and I think that was the difference.
The suspicion can be at this stage in the season, Marley, when you've got a team that's relegated and suddenly players start putting in performances. Aaron Ramsdale had a great game last night, made some brilliant saves, double save off Calvert-Lewin, a couple of late saves as well. There can be a suspicion that these guys are suddenly playing for transfers. They're playing for their contracts. Do you think that's the case with any of these Sheffield United players? Because the unity in that team was never in question under Chris Wilder. And now he's left. I don't know whether that changes the makeup of that squad a little bit.
I suppose it's always a worry, but the one thing I feel that Sheffield United have got going for them next season is that they're not going to have too many players leave in the summer. I think Sheffield United's their big strength was their unity under Chris Wilder, you know, when they finished, was it ninth or whatever it was. It was the fact that they were more than the sum of their parts. You know, players like John Lundstrom turned into, you know, a white Yaya Toure for part of that season, where he was scoring goals and putting in performances that were way above his level, you would think. So I just think they haven't got many where you would go, I would love to have him in my team. The likes of, you know, Baldock, Stevens, Egan, Basham, these players aren't going to up sticks and leave straight away. I think they're in, you know, 100% with Sheffield United. And they'll stay with them and they'll form a very, very good championship squad next year. I think even the players they've spent money on, with the exception of Sander Berger, even they'll probably stay. You look at Rian Brewster. No one's going to take a chance on Rian Brewster because he hasn't scored a Premier League goal. So no one's going to pay 20 million quid to take him when Sheffield United have just paid 20 million for him. And before he was at Sheffield United, I think he scored 16 goals for Swansea when he was on loan from Liverpool. So they've got a good championship striker there. They've got this new young kid who's just marked his debut with a goal. They've got plenty of players there. Ramsdale, I don't think anyone's going to come in for Ramsdale, even though he can look promising at times. He can also look absolutely calamitous at times as well. But
whoever comes up through the playoffs, Marley, going to make a late sweep for Ramsdale. Seems like every championship club is going to sign him.
You could be right there. But yeah, I mean, most of the squad will stay the same and they'll be strong next season. Whoever the manager is, I don't know what that situation's going to work out like, but it is what it is, and they'll stay relatively intact, I think.
I was just looking at the squad list for Sheffield United. I'd completely forgotten that they had Jack Rodwell on their books still. Made one appearance for them since he joined. It just boggles my mind. Just like Jack Rodwell is the instantly forgettable player from Premier League history. I think he must have played under 100 times or something in the last 10 years. But anyway, that's not the point. Let's talk briefly about Daniel Jeberson, I think it might be. I don't entirely know how to pronounce his surname. Scored the winning goal last night. Looked really bright, 17 years of age. His last senior game was for Chorley against Chester in December in the National League North. Is it too early to say whether they've uncovered a gem here, Niall? And could it have been any different if maybe he'd got his debut a little
bit
earlier?
Get him on the plane.
Part A of your question, is it too early? Yes. Part B of your question, could he have made a difference? No. That, you know, to break it down as simply as that, have they uncovered a gem? I'm not sure, because I think Jeberson's goal last night for the winner against Everton was the youngest winning goal scorer in a Premier League game since Federico Makeda scored the winner for Manchester United against Aston Villa in 2009. And everyone knows what happened to Federico Makeda. He ended up playing for Cardiff. He packed on a load of weight and got
Where is he now?
I don't know.
Is he in Greece? I think he's in Greece still.
I went to uni in Cardiff at the time when, funnily enough, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the manager of Cardiff. So I went and watched a few Cardiff games back in the, I think it was 13-14 season. And Federico Makeda was playing for Cardiff then. And the amount of you fat chance coming from the away end was quite surprising, considering only 5 or 6 years earlier he had bagged at Old Trafford to win a Premier League game and looked like the next big thing, you know, kind of breaking into that attack which had Ronaldo and Rooney and Tevez. And, you know, I just wonder whether we do like to get ahead of ourselves a little bit too much.
Last time I saw him, he was playing golf at Northenden Golf Club and he had a good swing on him. maybe went to the wrong sport. Yeah, very decent.
Oh, right. I was going to say, I'd be surprised if you saw Daniel Jeberson and recognised who he was playing golf at Northenden Golf Club. But still, you know, I think we've got a tendency in this country, and I think you'd both agree, to hype up young players when they first explode onto the scene. And very, very rarely does a player that explodes onto the scene become the ultimate superstar. I mean, you look at someone like Michael Owen, for example, who was scoring goals in the World Cup aged 17 and 18. And his career was effectively over by the time he was 30 because he was just run into the ground. Too many injuries, played too many games, which is why I think that we always drag it back to Phil Foden and Pep Guardiola's management of Phil Foden. Listen, this kid's come in. No one knows who he is. Like you say, his last senior goal was in December in the National League North, which is great senior experience. And I think that that's what you should be grateful for. I mean, he's had a dream debut. He scored a winner against a prestigious club like Everton at Goodison Park in a great old school stadium in the Premier League. His side have already been relegated. It's a day he'll never forget. But I don't think we can label it as he should have been the saviour for the Blades had he played more games. I just don't think we can say that. And I think even if he had come in and scored 5-10 goals, I still think Sheffield United would have gone down. So, yeah, I don't think that he's going to be the shining light. I mean, he might be in future because, I mean, I don't know anything about him. Barely really saw him last night. Kind of wasn't really focusing on him. Obviously, he scored the goal. But, you know, you look at someone like Jude Bellingham, who left Birmingham City, and there was a lot of hype, and he's gone to Borussia Dortmund. And I think they won the DFB Pokal at the weekend as well, the German version of the FA Cup, Borussia Dortmund. Bellingham's played in the Champions League this season as a 17-year-old. He could be in the England squad going to the Euros as well. So, you know, if we're talking about young talents and could this be the person to have kept Sheffield United up, I think if he was that good, we would have seen him already rather than a few games at the end of the season. So maybe it's one for next season. And if he can get a few games in the Championship, maybe they will be in with a shout of getting back into the Premier League. But as for making the difference this season, I just can't see it.
Let's talk quickly about Everton's European hopes, Marley. Is that it? Carlo Ancelotti said they're still in the fight, but realistically, have they got any chance of finishing in those, well, top seven, I guess it is, if you count the Europa Conference as a proper European competition?
Well, technically the Conference League is Europe, so maybe they got a shot at that.
Does that start next season? Yeah, the Europa Conference League.
Yeah. But I've heard nothing about it. Have you? I've literally only remembered about it at the weekend, and I thought, who the hell gets into that?
I keep forgetting that it even exists.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's whoever finishes seventh, isn't it? So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoever, you know, Everton obviously aren't out of that shot yet. Whether they'll want, well, I say whether they'll want to be in it, I think they will be in it because of the, I think they will want to be in it because of the money it might bring you, the extra revenue and what have you. But yeah, I think they've still got a chance, but I don't think they'll do it. I think West Ham will hang on to seventh, and I think pretty much we'll see the table finish as it is now, in that sort of sixth, seventh and eighth positions. Arsenal could even nick eighth over Everton at any point, and so could Leeds. So, you know, Everton, they need to sort this out, because I think going into next season, the bit of momentum would be nice, getting the fans back and then starting afresh. You've got the world-class manager, you've got the fans back, you've got the new stadium on the way, you've got money to spend in the summer. And yeah, you could be the inaugural winners of the one everyone wants to win, the Europa Conference League. So, you know, and I do think as well, if this Conference League starts, whoever is English representation would probably be one of the favourites to win it, because there's not going to be that much talent in it, I don't think, as a third-rate European league. So whoever, you would assume that, you know, the Premier League being so competitive and having so many very good teams, you would assume that whoever finishes seventh in England is going to be one of the favourites for it. So we'll see what happens.
I agree, and I'm just reading about it here. You know, some of the smaller nations, like, I don't know, Kazakhstan or Scotland, etc., you know, they have to qualify for
smaller
the Champions
nations
League.
Like Scotland. Wow, no.
Oh, come on.
When Callum and JP get hold of you on Thursday's podcast.
Get on the UEFA coefficient and have a look. I reckon Scotland is the 20th best league in Europe. I reckon the Belarus Premier League is more competitive than that. No, honestly, I'm joking. I'm being harsh. But basically, I think teams like Celtic and probably Rangers, they don't go straight into the Champions League, do they? They have to play a couple of qualification rounds. And I think reading about this Europa Conference League, the teams that lose in those qualification rounds drop straight into this competition. So basically, they're not completely denied a chance of playing in Europe. they're just kind of immediately dropped down in if they lose. It says here nations ranked 1 to 5 in the UEFA coefficient. So we know that's England, Spain, Germany, France and Italy. They'll only have one team as a representative. And the further it goes down, basically, or the Luxembourg champions, for instance, will get straight into this competition. So I think Marley's right. If someone like Arsenal finish 7th or Everton finish 7th, I mean, they'd be coming up against teams like, I don't know, who's 7th in La Liga? Granada, something like that? You know, and I know Granada have done well in the Europa League this year.
Might be Betis, maybe.
Exactly, but you'd be backing Arsenal or Everton or even Leeds to go on and win it.
Oh, do you know who it is right now?
Who is it?
Villarreal.
Is it?
Yeah. They're bloody good.
That's quite funny.
Oh, no.
But you'd be...
retract what I said before, because Villarreal are winning it if they get
it. But in all fairness, with this new competition, which I'm sure we'll learn about more over the summer, you'd have to back, like Marley says, whoever finishes 7th in England, like whether that's Arsenal, Everton.
I found a little list, by the way, of the teams that have qualified so far.
Go on, let's see. Can you read the names out?
No.
Here comes Jim's pronunciation bingo.
Right, so from the Dutch league, Fervar.
What?
Fervar. F-E-H-E-R-V-A-R. I've never heard of them. From the Irish league, Dundalk.
Dundalk.
So we saw that didn't they play Manchester United a couple of years back?
They played Arsenal in the Europa League a couple of years.
Fervar, a Hungarian, Jim, but fair enough.
Is
good
that
effort
a Hungarian
anyway.
Flag? It looks Dutch. I think so. I can't quite make out the colours.
All right. Yeah.
New Saints from the Welsh league. We've got a team just called FH from Iceland.
it's probably best you don't look into what FH is. The long version of it is, because I don't think anyone can pronounce that.
I can't work out most of the flags. I don't recognise, let alone the teams that are involved. But yeah, it's interesting reading. And obviously, as we know, 7th in the Premier League will qualify for the Europa Conference, which looks like it might be West Ham at the moment.
Oh my
right, we're going to leave
sorry,
it there.
I've just looked at what FH actually stands for. And
go on, then.
I'm not even sure. So it's Fim-like Afelag. That's the first bit. That's the F. And then H stands for Hafnarfjara.
There we go. Good morning to all our Icelandic listeners. That is it for the first part of Football Social Daily. We're going to make some bold predictions about what the rest of the season might hold outside of relegation and European spots in a minute on Football Social Daily as well. If you want to catch up on any of the weekend's action, you can find it on yesterday's podcast, Fergal and the team going back over all the big games from the weekend. But next up, Football Social Daily, Marley and Niall making their big predictions. We'll do it next. Welcome back to Football Social Daily. So I asked Marley and Niall to come up with a bold prediction about what the last week of the season might hold, because we know who the champions are. Manchester City have got that sewn up. We know who's been relegated. Fulham, Sheffield United and West Brom all facing a season in the Championship next year. But outside of that, there's still some interesting stories yet to reach their conclusion. So I've asked you to make a bold prediction for the last week of the season. Niall, take it away.
Yeah, so my prediction is for Fim-like Afelag Hafni Yardyar to win the Europa Conference League next season. My prediction is Crystal Palace to finish 12th. They're currently 13th. I think they might be able to do it. There's a points difference. You know, I'm joking. The difference between Villa in an 11th, 49 points, and Crystal Palace, 13th, 44 points. And obviously that's a 5-point gap with 2 games to go. So that is the real battle, mid-table. Who can finish in the top, who can finish 11th, gain a couple of extra million quid for their club's transfer kitty next season. Now I'm going to look slightly higher up the table. Obviously a lot of focus is on top four at the moment. Chelsea have Leicester on Tuesday night. So that's a big game in the race for the top four, particularly from a Chelsea perspective. They lost to Leicester in the FA Cup at the weekend. Leicester have a 2-point cushion over Chelsea in fourth, and a 3-point cushion over Liverpool in fifth. Liverpool 5 games without defeat, but I want to take a look at Arsenal because I've slagged them off a lot this season. They're ninth at the moment, 55 points, 3 wins in a row, 2 games to go. At the moment, Tottenham are 6th, West Ham 7th, both on 59 points. Again, another 4-point gap there. If they win the next 2 games, they could end up 6th or 7th. I think that there's a chance that Arsenal could do exactly what they always like to brag about back in the day and finish above Tottenham in the league, even when Tottenham have looked like they're going to finish above them all season. Arsenal do like to sneak up behind and finish above them. So I'm going to say that because I've been impressed with Arsenal the last couple of games. I've been unimpressed with them all season. I think they've had a shocking campaign. And if they finish seventh, that paper's over the cracks. It would annoy you as a West Ham fan. It would annoy Tottenham fans. I think my big prediction is I fancy Arsenal to win their next two games, the final two games of the season.
Winnable games as well, Palace and Brighton.
Exactly. That makes it five wins in a row. And I think that we could see Arsenal finish sixth or seventh. And if you want to be really bold, I think above Tottenham. So that's my bold prediction. I was going to go Leeds to finish seventh, but that would involve West Ham not picking up any points in the next two games and Leeds winning their next two, which I think is slightly more bold just because it's less likely. But considering the season Arsenal have had, because if you look at Leeds in 10th, you're saying, well, well done. They've had a great season. They've done really well. But Arsenal, you look at them in ninth and you go, they've had a rubbish season because the expectations are obviously wildly different.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be my bold prediction, I think. Arsenal to win the next two and finish above Tottenham or West Ham and sneak into that Europa Conference spot.
I would be if Arsenal finish above this season, that would wind me right up. My bold prediction's also about the European places, maybe even a little bit less bold than that, because I am convinced Leicester are going to slip outside of the top four now. I don't think there'll be any Champions League football for Leicester next season. I think when you look at the fixtures they've got left compared to Chelsea and Liverpool, they've got the worst set of fixtures. So their next two games are against Chelsea away and Spurs at home. That Chelsea game is absolutely massive because Chelsea have obviously got that game. Then they've got Aston Villa, the final day of the season. Liverpool have got Burnley Palace. And I think Leicester, there's a real chance they could suffer an FA Cup hangover here, as a lot of teams do, particularly, all respect to Leicester, when it's a smaller team, inverted commas, that have won a big trophy. It can take them a little while, kind of that after the Lord Mayor's show effect, and their form will drop off. So I think it's really, I mean, it's in their own hands because they're in a situation where they have got a points advantage on both those teams. But at the same time, they've got much tougher fixtures. They've just come off the back of a massive win for the club that no doubt they did go out and have a couple of beers. There was a little bit of celebration after that because we saw some of the photos on social media. So I think there could be an impact from that and they might slip out of those Champions League places. So that's my prediction. Leicester City will not get Champions League football. Marley, wrap it up. What's your final prediction, your outrageous call for the end of the season?
Well, I had two and you two have both said them, which is amazing. So thank you for that. So I'm gonna have to come up with a third one.
Steve Bruce to win manager of the year,
Newcastle to still somehow go down even though the relegation spots have already been decided.
One thing, it's not exactly as big as a prediction as I've ever made in my life, but I think Fulham are going to break the record for the lowest points of any team that's ever finished 18th. So I think the lowest points of any team that's ever finished 18th is 31 points, and Fulham are on 27 right now, and their last two matches are against Newcastle on the last day, and so that should be 3 points. And then who have they got? They've got Man United tomorrow. So I think maximum they're going to get out of those games is 3 points and they'll break the record. And the whole thing, the sort of whole point I'm getting at here is that the relegated teams this year have been so poor. Like in terms of comparing to other years, they've been the worst by far. I mean, relegation was done with 5 games to go? And yeah,
which is unheard of, isn't it, for all three teams to be relegated by that point. Normally, there's a last day of the season chance for someone.
Always,
well,
is.
Sheffield United have been down for ages, haven't they?
Yeah, there's always the 18th place team is always sort of at least the last two games, and it's not rare to see it in the last 10 minutes. It could over, you know, change from one team to another, and you have that mashed up match of the day. Thing where it's like 65 minutes and Fulham score, and then 68 minutes, I don't know, Brighton score or whatever, and you have that great little edit thing. But now this year it's just going to be flat out normal match of the day. because they've gone down with a whimper, basically, all three teams. And with the amount of money Fulham have spent as well, you are disappointed in them. So I think that's going to be the one thing we get from this season. They'll go down with probably under 30 points. And that's awful.
Do you think the likes of Brighton and your team, Newcastle, will be counting themselves lucky? Because do you think in another season, a more regular season, they would have found themselves in real trouble?
Yeah. I mean, I can speak obviously only for Newcastle, but they nearly sleptwalked into a fire, basically, an absolute mess. Because, what was it, 12 or 13 games without a win? Never looked like we were going to win a game, to be honest. And then something's clicked from the last five or six games, and we've improved a lot. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that we've been awful for most of the season. And then, you know, Steve Bruce wins Manager of the Month, and everyone's like, well, what's the problem? He's won Manager of the Month. He's been there for like nearly 24 months now. And if there was an award for worst Manager of the Month, he'd have probably won that 12 or 13 times. You know, it'd be just full of his little trophy cabinet, just worst Manager of the Month every month. But you know, we've got away with it as we usually do, and we won't learn any lessons from it as we usually don't in the
summer.
That's
what I was going to ask. I was going to ask, will Newcastle learn lessons from this?
No, probably not. It's like if you get if you pass an exam with like 61% and then the pass rate 60%, you just think, well, that's a pass. That's it. Happy days. Like, you don't, our board don't care about whether how it got done. They don't care about football enough to be bothered about how much better we could have been had we had 20 more million to spend in the summer or what have you. Even that, to be fair, we spent enough money in the summer to get we've got a better squad than 16th, in my opinion, and probably Brighton have as well. And Brighton are the biggest conundrum in the Premier League because they play great football and don't win games, which is strange. You know, they've got 17th, they've got a -5 goal difference. -5 is insane. Like, Wolves have got -14 and they're 12th. And, you know, Everton have got 3. That's an 8 goal swing. And Everton are 8th and Brighton are 17th. It's crazy with the way the season's worked out. But, you know, we'll have to see what both teams do this summer. But there won't be much coming from Newcastle, I don't think. And hopefully the new Premier League teams coming up can do better than the ones I have this season, because it's been pretty much shocking from start to finish, really.
As Marley says, the focus is beginning to switch to next season, and over the next few months people are going to be scouring the back pages of the newspapers looking for the potential signings for their team. It's already begun. The transfer merry-go-round has been cranked up. It's been greased, it's been WD-40'd, it's been tested for its bearings or whatever. So we're going to talk about some of the transfers that are on the back pages of the papers throughout Europe next on Football Social Daily. Welcome back. Final bit of Football Social Daily for today. Let's have a look at some of the transfer rumours doing the rounds. And there's some interesting ones and some farcical ones. Probably the latter category applies to being reported in The Sun yesterday that Manchester City have been told they are allowed to sign Lionel Messi from Barcelona, but they're going to have to pay him £500,000 a week after tax. Is this just one of those SEO clickbait sell papers stories now, Niall? Because surely if this was going to happen, it would have happened last summer. It's not going to happen this summer, because Lionel Messi is another year on in his career. His value is slipping. He's not been as impactful this season as he has in previous season, although for Lionel Messi, he's still obviously had a massive impact and still been a great player. But it just feels like the time has gone for his move to City for me.
I'm not sure I agree. I don't think this will happen, by the way. The report in the newspaper said they'd need to pay him £500,000 a week after tax. And I don't think Manchester City, as much money as they do have, pay those sorts of wages. I really don't. I don't think that Manchester City pay as much as Chelsea or Manchester United do in terms of players' wages. I think they've got a lot of earners on £100,000 a week and a couple on £250,000. But I just don't think they would ever double someone's, you know, wages to the point where, you know, £500,000 a week is a staggering amount of money, and that, as you say, is after tax. I just think it goes completely against what Manchester City have in play in terms of their structure for signing players and the wage brackets that they're on. However, you say that his stock's slipping and is it clickbait? Anything involving Lionel Messi will be clicked on because he is a phenomenon. He is an icon of the game. He's possibly the greatest ever player to lace up a pair of boots or slip on a pair of boots if you see the modern ones they wear now. But still, 33 years old, an absolute global icon, and I would begrudge you not to find someone who doesn't like football that hasn't heard of Lionel Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo. Such are, you know, the global superstars that they are. And I think that, as we've seen so often in recent times, as you creep into your mid-30s, you can still perform. Zlatan Ibrahimovic is 39. Edinson Cavani, I think, is 34, still banging in goals for Manchester United, and they've just signed him to a year extension. Cristiano Ronaldo has been the quickest player to reach 100 goals for Juventus, and what's he now, 35? Maybe be 36 in the summer? So, if you're talking about, is Messi still able to contribute something? Yes, he absolutely is. Now, the Premier League, as we say so often, is the most viewed league in the world. Some would say it's the best. Others would say La Liga's the best. That's sometimes up for debate. But what isn't up for debate is that more eyes will watch the Premier League than any other division across the world. And from a PR perspective for Manchester City, they would make as much money back in shirt sales as it would cost them to sign him. And I don't think it's the wages... I don't think it's the transfer fee, if there was one, that would be an issue. I don't know whether he's available for free or what the deal is with Barcelona. But if there was a transfer fee, I don't think that would be an issue. They'd pay, I think they'd pay 90, 100, 120 million for Messi. That's fine. You know, we don't see City paying that much money for players very often, if ever. We've never seen it, really. They often spend 50 or 60 here and there. But I think they would do that to sign him. However, I just think £500,000 a week after tax, it's just... it's unsustainable. It's the reason the football's in the. It's the reason that football's in the financial mess that it is. And listen, I'm not against players wanting a pay rise. Kevin De Bruyne went in there and negotiated his own contract on his own without an agent. And there's no doubt that Kevin De Bruyne's got an increase in wages from that contract extension. That's naturally what happens when you sign a player to a new deal. They get paid more money. So I think that that's a normal thing, and I'm not against players doing that. However, £500,000 a week after tax, you know, and then there's people out there complaining that the European Super League's a disgrace to football and it's going to ruin the game, and financially you're stomping on the other clubs below you. Why would you pay a player £500,000 a week? Messi could be the greatest ever, but is he worth that? Absolutely not. Is any player worth that? No. You know, and then this gets into conversations about wage caps and stuff like that. So in terms of the story as a whole, can I see it happening? Yes, I can see Messi playing for Manchester City. The links were there. The Pep Guardiola link was there. I think a lot of the reputable press were also hinting that Messi was on the Manchester City radar. However, £500,000 a week after tax. I mean, Manchester City are as rich as they come, but I don't think even they would be sucked into paying that.
In terms of Messi's future at Barcelona, there's a few rumours going around that they are willing to let him leave. They don't want that contract extension. They're more interested in bringing in Erling Haaland, which even then seems a stretch given the financial situation at Barcelona at the moment. Let's move on to the other side of Manchester, Manchester United. As always, rumours around Paul Pogba and his future. Contract negotiations potentially about to get underway for Paul Pogba at Manchester United, but apparently, according to the Sunday Mirror, Manchester United slightly concerned that Mino Raiola is going to try and get a little bit more money for his client. If he slaps a massive demand on the table, Marley, if you were Manchester United, do you say, fine, we still recognise you are one of the best midfielders in the world, we want to keep you at the club, or because of his poor form, injuries this season, he hasn't quite lived up to the hype, and because of the constant drama that surrounds Paul Pogba wherever he goes, would you be looking to break those ties?
I don't know. It's tough, this, because he's coming off the back of what I think is probably his best season as a Man United player so far. So I don't really know if now's the time to get rid of him. Like, he seems to have settled down. He seems to have found a place in the team. That's the same in the same team as Bruno Fernandes. They seem to dovetail really well. He links up really, really well with Luke Shaw on that left-hand side. And I think if you were ever going to give him a new contract and tie him down, I think now is the time to do it, because I don't think, if you look at who's out there that could sign him, you look at Juventus, where he was linked with Juventus there. You know, I think they're fifth in the Italian league, and they're maybe not in the Champions League next year. They might have a new manager. I don't know. Pirlo's not the best manager at the minute. He's in his sort of rookie year and finding it a bit hard. So that's maybe not a genuine place to go. You're looking at Real Madrid. They're in transition. They're all over the place. There's rumours that Zidane's leaving. Barcelona have completely strapped for cash, or so they'd have you believe, until they get rid of Messi. So that's another one out of the way. The only one you could probably look at is PSG, and I can see him playing for PSG in the future, but would they go? Do they want to go and sign him now? I'm not sure. I've not heard that link before. It doesn't, like, usually in transfers this big you hear, it's like a badly kept secret, isn't it? You usually hear where he's going to go before he goes there. And sometimes it's like 6 months before, so I've never heard of that. So I can see him staying at Man United, and he's 28 now, so it's kind of like his last big, like, if you're going to move, he's in his prime now. It's kind of similar to Harry Kane, you know. It's it's that time where you have to get this next move right, and you have to be sure that it's going to be right for you in the long term. But I think with the way Man United are going, I think they're going in the right direction, really. So I don't see why there's any chance that he'd want to leave. I think you can guarantee success if you go to someone like PSG, but if they're not interested in you, you've got to look at what you can do to try and close that gap on Man City if you're Man United. So I think he's playing his best football at Man U. He's not causing as many problems as he has in the past, and everything seems fine. So stay, carry on.
Let's talk about the future of another player in the northwest, Ozan Kabak, who came into Liverpool this year in the January transfer window in an attempt to shore up their defence, which was ravaged by injuries. 21 years old, he's on loan from Schalke this season. It doesn't look like he's going to be staying in Liverpool. They've not been impressed enough with his form to sign him on a permanent deal this summer. Has he shown anything in a Liverpool shirt, Niall, that would convince you that maybe another Premier League team might take a chance on him if he isn't going to continue his career in Merseyside?
I think he's done okay, considering where he came from and what he was thrust into and his age. I think he's done okay. And, I mean, I'm a Portsmouth fan, so I'm the worst person to ask, really. We take Ozan Kabak at our club because we're but, you know, you're West Ham and Newcastle fans, respectively. Maybe you're the ones who should be answering that question, really, because, I mean, would you take him at West Ham, Jim?
I think he's looked decent. I think he's made a few mistakes, and those mistakes have cost Liverpool, but that's what you get from a 21-year-old centre-back. They're not going to be the finished article, and they need kind of that time in the top division alongside an experienced centre-back, which he hasn't had at Liverpool either, to kind of grow into the role. So there's definitely a player in there.
Yeah, and obviously Schalke, I think, were in the relegation zone in the Bundesliga when he came over from Germany. So you have to say, going to a team that are reigning Premier League champions from a side that are scrapping to stay alive in the Bundesliga and getting beaten easily every week, you know, naturally a few eyebrows would have been raised. But I think the question here is whether he is going to be a regular starter for Liverpool, which the answer is no. When Van Dijk is back and Joe Gomez is back, he's not going to get a game unless one of those two gets injured. Joel Matip is made of poppadoms, so, you know, he's not going to get much game time. I think Liverpool need two centre-backs. And listen, Kabak was a good loan deal, a good stopgap. And like you said, I think he's done enough to convince someone to take a move on him. If you look at the quality of defenders in the Premier League and how much it costs to get a solid top-class centre-back, you are looking in the upper reaches of 70, 80, 90 million pounds. I mean, Harry Maguire and Virgil van Dijk, two prime examples. But look at Wesley Fofana at Leicester, who was absolutely phenomenal against Chelsea in the FA Cup final at the weekend. He won every header. He looked so calm.
Some player, isn't
he? Yeah, for a 19-year-old, he's got such a turn of pace as well. Quick centre-backs are very hard to come by. That's why Rio Ferdinand was so effective at what he did, because he was calm and he also had a bit of pace behind him. But I mean,
he couldn't outjump Paul Dummett last week, though, could he? Bollocks?
He couldn't. You're right. But he is only 19, and, you know, I think back to what I was doing when I was 19. There's no way I could have been marshalling a top four defence, an FA Cup winning defence. So I think that if you look at the difference, I know there's a 2-year difference, and everyone develops at different ages. But if Wesley Fofana is the standard, how far away is Ozan Kabak from that? So I think that he's done well enough to convince another Premier League side to take a chance on him. whether he would rather go back to Germany and play for another German club. Now he's played for a giant in England like Liverpool. I don't know. I'm not surprised Liverpool haven't taken the option up if this story from The Sun is true. But also, at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if we do see him back in the Premier League next season. I think that he's done enough and it'd be an interesting summer for him.
Really interesting story in the Mail on Sunday this weekend. I'll be interested to get your views on this, Niall, because I know how you like commenting on Southampton players, but I'll get Marley's first. Ryan Bertrand, who his contract runs out at the end of the season at Southampton, being linked with moves to Arsenal and Manchester City at the moment. Are you surprised to see Bertrand being linked with clubs of that quality, Marley? Would you expect him to make that kind of move?
Yes, I'd be very surprised. It's like, I don't really know where this has come from, to be honest, other than the fact that he's free. I don't think anybody of those stature clubs would be trying to sign him if you had to pay a fee for him, because, you know, I think there's better options out there. But because he's free, it's like, it's almost like risk-free. And he is experienced. He's been around a long, long time. He's, you know what, it's almost like a completely solid signing. You know he's not going to be awful. You know he's not going to be a world beater. You just know he's going to be a good sort of squad player and help your team through it. But I can't see one of these moves materialising. Possibly more to Arsenal than to Manchester City. But, you know, when Man City have got... They could go out and sign any left-back in the world, Man City. And I think they should as well. They should go and get someone. And make that sort of back four solid with Diaz, Laporte, Stones as your centre backs, and you know you've got two world class right backs there in Walker and Cancelo. I think left back's the only. It's almost like the missing piece to the puzzle, really. So,
well, Zinchenko's quite good. He's played quite well left back, and
he's not,
I mean, Mendy.
Not,
I think
he's not consistent.
Does he?
No, is he like? No. Sometimes he but can this, play this... A mint. Sometimes he can play a bit wobbly.
That might be why that they want Bertrand, because he has played left back for 2-3 seasons for Southampton and for Chelsea before that. He won the Champions League with Chelsea, by the way. He started on that
left midfield
day in 2012 when they won the Champions League. Yeah, exactly. They won the Champions League and he started in the final. But I think that maybe it is consistency. This, to me, just screams that City are going to try and get rid of Benjamin Mendy in the summer.
Yeah, I think it...
Which wouldn't be surprising, would it? I mean, his time has come to leave that club.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I mean... Bertrand, it's just a bit of a solid signing, unspectacular, but sometimes, you know, we've seen it with Delph, with Man City. He got turned into a left back by Guardiola, and he sort of proved that he can be coached to a level where you wouldn't expect that of someone like him. You know, if Guardiola can do that with a centre midfielder, can he? What could he do with a proper left back? And could he make him have that step up to a level where we don't really think he's at anymore. There's no guarantees about it. There's no, you couldn't properly rule it out either. So we'll see what they do, because it's one of them where, as I say, there's no real risk with it. So if you can get him on a free for 50 grand a week, you've barely scratched your budget for the summer.
Feels to me like it might be a case of an agent trying to drum up interest in his player who is reaching the end of his contract. So why not link him with some of the big clubs? Why not suggest there's maybe a transfer there when there is no interest in hopefully getting him somewhere that is maybe slightly lower down the pecking order? We'll do one final transfer rumour, and that has come from La Gazzetta dello Sport, Italian press, and apparently Napoli are battling Manchester United for the signature of Villarreal and Spain's centre-back, Pau Torres. Tell me about this player, Marley. I don't know anything about him. Is he the solution to Manchester United's centre-back problem?
He could be. He's pretty much the hottest property in Spain, really, in terms of defenders. I think he's pretty much the go-to partner for Sergio Ramos in the Spanish national team at the minute. And he's got everything. He's young. I think he's like 23 or something like that. So he's got all the best sort of years ahead of him. And he's available, basically. So I think if you can get someone like him, you know you can get 7 or 8 years out of him if everything goes well. I think Man you do need another centre back, in my opinion. I think Maguire's impact when Man United played the last game against Liverpool, they looked all over the place at the back, and it was more than a coincidence that Maguire didn't play that game, and Lindelof and Bailly, who are two of the most sort of erratic, inconsistent defenders playing together, was a bit of a recipe for disaster. But no, Pau Torres is building a reputation as one of the best sort of young-ish centre-backs in Europe. And fair play. I mean, Villarreal, like we said before, the seventh, they're not title challengers. They're not in that race. They're not in that tier of sort of elite clubs. So people are always going to be looking at him. And Man United against Napoli, for me, is a bit of a mismatch because I don't think Napoli can offer what Man United offer in terms of wages or structure or anything, really. I think you don't grow up as a Spanish footballer watching Napoli, I don't think, and saying, I'd love to play there one day. You only do that if you're either Italian or you watched Maradona play for them in the early 90s, and this kid was born in 97, so he doesn't have a clue about that kind of thing. And also, once he Googles Naples, he'll realise that it's an absolute
Oh, there's some not lovely parts in there.
You're going to get stabbed the next time you go to Italy.
There isn't.
I mean, there's a good chance of getting stabbed in Naples anyway. To be fair,
I've been to Naples. It's interesting. It's very interesting.
What do you mean you don't like?
Scared.
You know, in the shadow of Vesuvius and all of that.
Oh, no, not for me. well, when you go from like Rome and Bologna to Napoli, it's quite to Naples. It's quite a culture shock, to be honest. The skyline isn't quite the same. But yeah, so it's one of them. I just don't. If Man United go up against Napoli and they're the only opposition, it's only going to end one way, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
This is a transfer that it's important Manchester United get right, though, isn't it, Niall? I mean, I think we look at the kind of where the deficiencies are in that squad. For me, the centre-back is the priority this transfer window above anything else.
Well, we've seen movement at Manchester United from a defensive perspective in terms of contracts and rumours in the press and obviously injuries as well in the last few weeks. So Eric Bailly, let's not forget, a couple of weeks ago put pen to paper on a new long-term Manchester United deal. I think it was 5 years. I might be wrong, but it was a long-term deal. And Bailly spent a lot of time injured at Manchester United since he's been there. However, for some people, that signified that United won't dip into the market and sign a new centre-back. However, Harry Maguire is currently in a protective boot, uncertain as to whether he'll play against Villarreal in the final of the Europa League, which is coming up on next Wednesday, the 26th. So there are a few question marks defensively over Manchester United without Harry Maguire, which, as Marley rightly says, seem to be exposed against Liverpool. I just think Maguire offers a lot more than what people see on face value. He's quite a robust defender in the sense that it's very rare that he gets injured. I mean, when he came off against Aston Villa, he had played every minute of every Manchester United Premier League game this season before that. And he was actually going for a record. He was trying to break Gary Pallister's record of most consecutive league minutes for Man United in a single season. And unfortunately for him, he came off injured, but it's the leadership, I think, that he brings. And even if he is prone to the odd error, every defender is, especially when you're trying to play through the back. That is such a difficult thing to do without making a mistake, which is why the best defenders at doing it cost so much money, the likes of Van Dijk, for example. So I do think that there needs to be a bit of movement at the back. I mean, there are question marks over whether Axel Tuanzebe will still be a Manchester United player next summer. He's another one that can't really seem to get a run of games in the team. He started against Leicester, wasn't involved in the Liverpool game. Phil Jones is still injured. Marcus Rojo's obviously left the club. Chris Smalling left the club recently, didn't need to go to Roma. In terms of fullbacks, Brandon Williams, I think he's been linked with Southampton. We just spoke about the Ryan Bertrand leaving St. Mary's. I think that Southampton are keen on Brandon Williams at Manchester United to go in there and fill that void. So I think we will see some defensive shuffling at Manchester United in the summer. Now, Pau Torres, he's got a chance to impress even more than he already has done this season, because United obviously play his current team in the final of the Europa League. And if he's partnering Ramos at the back for Spain, as Marley says, that's an endorsement enough to play for a top European national team at centre-back in a side like Spain, who aren't the same Spain we saw 10 years ago when they were winning Euros and World Cups all over the place. To still do that is very, very impressive. So I think Lindelof as well, he's got an issue with his back. He can't play more than 3 or 4 games in a row without having to have a break, because he gets back spasms, and that's an issue that Manchester United need to look at. But I just think in general, I think that with Bailly signing a new contract and Harry Maguire possibly coming back from injury ready for next season, depending on the Euros, of course, then there are a few that aren't convinced that United will sign a new centre-back at all, which I think would be concerning. So if this fella is available, and as Marley says, it's only Napoli in the running for him, I think that if Manchester United can spend 50 million quid on him and get him in, I think that it could be a good signing.
There is more on the transfer news for every Premier League club and more on their games that are coming this week, because every Premier League club is involved in midweek fixtures on the Sports Social website, sport-social.co.uk. You can also find a link there to the Sports Social Podcast Network, where you can discover your next favourite podcast, or should I say second favourite podcast, after Football Social Daily, of course. Thank you very much for listening to today's podcast. Cheers, Niall. Cheers, Marley.
Cheers, Jim. Thanks, Marley.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Give us a follow so you never miss an episode. Don't forget, loads of extra content to come over the Euros as well. We'll see you next time.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.